Chapter 7. Is this paradise? Some people dream of living an idyllic, carefree life on a tropical island, somewhere in the Pacific, but not me. However, due to a sequence of unsettling familial events, I did live the dream for a short time. I was 12 years old. In 1958, my parents divorced. In early December of 1960, my mother, the innocent party, now with a considerable monthly maintenance payment, decided to up stakes and take me to New Guinea to visit my brother for his last unmarried Christmas. He was managing a copra and cocoa plantation for Carpenter and Company that was located on Karkar Island, some 30 kilometers nor-nor-east of Midang, in the Bismarck Sea. Excitement intensified as we prepared for our Christmas adventure that would be a leap into the unknown for both of us. The adventure began by taking a Trans-Australia Airlines aircraft out of Sydney to Port Moresby. It was a long flight on a clear day, with breathtaking views of the Great Barrier Reef from my starboard window. I was enthralled as we flew over a never-ending random scattering of coral atolls, both large and small. Close in, the atolls were surrounded by shallower water in shades of turquoise and pale blue. As the water deepened, the colors gradually changed to shades of mid-green and gray-blue that shimmered out to the horizon. The ever-changing vista provided me hours of diversion during the long flight that was punctuated with refreshments. Lunch was something special. Red Emperor fillets cooked to perfection. A delicious first for me and somewhat ironic as we flew over the coral reefs from where I imagined the fish had recently been caught. Disembarking at Port Moresby, we were hit by a wall of tropical heat. Our next stop was Midang. This time, we boarded a DC-3 aircraft, and when we landed at Midang Airport, my brother, who had come into town especially, was there to meet us. We planned to overnight in Midang, before traveling out to Karkar Island the next morning. As we'd been traveling all day, we were very thankful for the opportunity to enjoy our first evening in the tropics at the charming Smugglers Hotel, with its awe-inspiring panoramic view of Karkar Island's conical volcano that rose dramatically out of the sea. Early next morning, our suitcases were loaded onto a smallish cargo boat that was tied up alongside the Midang Wharf. Once aboard, we discovered that there was no passenger accommodation, so I made myself as comfortable as possible on the hatch cover for the 8-hour trip. After leaving the protection of Midang Harbour, the sea became choppy and rough. Most of the passengers were throwing up over the side whilst I enjoyed scoffing down Devon and pickle sandwiches, completely unaffected by the movement of the boat as it lurched up and down and from side to side. Despite the rough crossing, we arrived safely. Many of the passengers were somewhat the worse for wear, and very thankful to be on dry land once more. My brother was employed by Carpenter and Company to manage Marangas Plantation, which was located on the western side of the island. Settling into the manager's house brought with it unexpected surprises, both physical and sociological. We found the relentless heat and humidity stiflingly oppressive and relished the occasional tropical downpour that provided temporary relief. As city people, we were exposed to unfamiliar relics of a bygone age. For example, a kerosene refrigerator and a diesel-powered generator to provide electric lighting at night. An unexpectedly unnerving experience for me was being surrounded by people who spoke languages I didn't understand, and they in turn, didn't understand me. More worrying still was the all-pervasive colonial attitude my brother demonstrated in his role as the white master in control of all aspects of plantation life. For example, beside the kitchen steps grew a huge avocado tree that was loaded with fruit the size of a small baby's head. When ripe, the fruit would fall onto the grass below with a loud thunk. My mother and I were addicted to avocados, and couldn't believe our good luck. The prospect of a fresh never-ending supply filled us with glee. But our glee was short-lived, as my brother forbade us to eat the avocados, because he said it was native food. My brother's transport, provided by Carpenter and Company, was a BSA Bantam 150cc motorbike. I rode pillion with my brother whenever we visited plantations out of work hours. Plantation hopping was referred to as a recreational activity, and I quickly came to understand the term was code for getting drunk. I also noticed that beer, rather than spirits, was the beverage of choice. Thankfully, wherever we went, there was always a bottle of lemonade for me. Another form of recreation, enjoyed by the wild white masters of Karkar Island, was water skiing. To be part of it, my brother ordered a flatpack boat from Australia. He chose to construct the boat on the dining room table, located on the wide veranda of his large plantation house. The house, with stunning views of the ocean, was built of native materials. When launch time came, a woven bamboo sidewall of the house was removed, and the boat was ceremoniously paraded down to the bay below by a team of plantation workers. Once launched, a 40-horsepower Evinrude outboard motor was attached. Water skiing was a favorite weekend pastime. Shortly after our arrival, it was suggested I learn to ski. At the outset, I recall being more than willing. One weekend, with the boat in the bay, the plantation workers assembled along the shoreline to watch the liklik misses, that is, tok pissing, in the lingua franca of New Guinea, for a young white girl, have a go. With my brother giving instructions from the back of the boat, I rose from squatting to standing, but not for long. I found myself toppling forward, as if in slow motion, to fall head first into the water. As I toppled, I heard a groan of disappointment rise from the largest group of onlookers on shore. That day, I was determined to master the sport, so I kept trying. But without success. It seemed I had no natural aptitude. All in all, it was a discouraging experience and the last time I attempted water skiing. And the boat had other uses. It provided a much simpler and more comfortable way for three of us to travel to other plantations. One Sunday morning, my mother, my brother and I, climbed aboard and headed north to the Middleton family plantation, located further around the island. The Middletons were pre-World War II planters. Their superimposing plantation house was an immense Queenslander, with verandas all around. During World War II, officers of the Imperial Japanese Army and Navy used the house for rest and recreation, after making some minor modifications. Surveying the damage to the house after the war, the family discovered the legs of their large wooden dining table had been shortened to accommodate diners, accustomed to sitting on the floor. But I digress. On our arrival at Kalali, we were served a beautifully prepared and presented luncheon on the wide veranda, with spectacular views out across the ocean. Afterwards, freshwater swimming was suggested. I was intrigued at the prospect, and wasn't disappointed. We wound our way along a narrow track through the bush, that led to a beautiful natural spring. The spring water flowed gently down through a profusion of verdant vegetation, that was filled with a myriad of colorful flowering tropical plants. We soon discovered that the water was deep enough, and the flow strong enough, to slowly float us towards the sea. I was transported to another time and place. If ever one was to encounter elves or fairies, it was there. Plantation hospitality included an invitation to stay for dinner. It was dark by the time we climbed aboard my brother's boat for the return trip to Marangas Plantation. It was a bright moonlit night and the sea was calm. But before long, the boat began taking on water. I was given a plastic jug and ordered to bail. It transpired that the leakage was the result of my brother's haste in constructing the boat. Impatient, and wanting a quick result, he opted to nail rather than screw the plywood sheeting to the boat frame. I continued to bail for the duration and was very thankful that we made it back to the plantation safely. As Christmas approached, my contribution to our planned festivities in paradise was an exotic Christmas cake, a modified woman's weekly recipe, chock full of rum-soaked dried fruit. The kitchen staff watched on attentively as I bumbled my way through the directions. I was beginning to speak a little tok pissing, but when lost for words, I resorted to gesticulating. My performances providing light relief for all concerned. Christmas fun for the plantation laborers took the form of a vertical greasy pole with a tempting selection of goodies, tied to a crossbar at the top. These goodies included lap-laps, tobacco, money, soap, and towels. The plantation laborers were adept palm tree climbers, but this was different. In preparation, a deep hole was dug into which a liberally greased 10-meter pole was manhandled into position. The base was then secured with rocks and firmly tamped down soil. At the outset, the climbers made little upward progress. As the grease was gradually rubbed away, the climbers began inching upwards, higher and higher and closer to the dangling booty. The winner, the first man to the top, took the lot. The new year of 1961 was welcomed in at a boozy gathering somewhere on the island. Not long after, our tropical island adventure came to an expected end. It was time to move on, as our objective had been achieved. We had been introduced to plantation life, had had a most unusual holiday experience, whilst at the same time provided my brother with familial support for his last Christmas as a bachelor. His marriage proposal had been accepted, and he was poised to take the next step. But it would mean having to forego his indulgent lifestyle, as a single man, managing a copra and cocoa plantation in New Guinea. On reflection. Life in the tropics. My brother and his Kaka Island plantation manager mates were mostly in their mid-20s and single. They led an unconstrained, hedonistic lifestyle, and consumed copious quantities of alcohol. Weekends were often spent moving from one plantation to the next, when the booze ran out. Alcohol was the societal glue of island life, as it is in Australia, and I do wonder how many of those young men became alcohol dependent as a result. Alcohol. As alcohol is mentioned a number of times in this document, I feel an explanation is needed. My family were infrequent drinkers. My only alcohol-related childhood memory is of my parents occasionally enjoying a dry sherry before dinner. As the result of my sheltered upbringing, the alcohol consumption on Kaka Island came as a huge shock. My mother and I lived in New Guinea between 1960 and 1973. During those 13 years, I saw many people's lives affected by the interface of boredom and booze, particularly beer. Because of this experience, I disliked the smell and the taste of beer. And for the record, I had my own dalliance with alcohol, but quit in 1982. Yes, I remain teetotal to this day, but I'm not a wowser. Late night speed boating. When I was a kid, I didn't think to question the decisions made by adults, particularly my mother and my brother. I always assumed that our collective safety was uppermost in their thinking. When I reflect on our reckless late night run in a leaky boat, by the light of the moon, I wonder if alcohol-induced bravado played a part in the decision to return to the plantation by boat that evening. In retrospect, I found my Kaka Island experience a separate reality. At that time, Papua and New Guinea were considered the last frontier. Many Europeans behaved like cowboys, my brother included. However, during our Christmas visit, his lifestyle was somewhat constrained, as he was on his best behavior for the duration of our stay. Facts. Master and Mrs. Terms used to refer to a European man or woman. These terms remain in use to this day. Kaka Island is one of a string of active volcanic islands found at the southern boundary of the South Bismarck tectonic plate. As the result of intermittent volcanic activity over thousands of years, the andesitic soil is very fertile. Soil fertility and an annual rainfall of 3,440 mm combine to create the perfect conditions for introduced cash crops of coconuts and cocoa. Perfect too for the island's indigenous subsistence agriculturalists, the Takia and Waskia people, who have cultivated this island's mineral-rich soil for hundreds and possibly thousands of years.